Hello, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the next episode of Nerd Out Sanctuary. This is episode number 21. Yep, we're past 20 now, so this is kind of, we're moving along, hopefully doing this week by week. Got this week, I mean, I'm just taking it one at a time, guys. One at a time, one week at a time, let's see how we do it. Work was, like, you know, kind of crazy. Did two shifts of night shift, and then had a day off, and then went back to day shift. I'll tell you what, the noise in my apartment does not help me sleep. I will say that much, especially when you have to sleep during the day. Apparently, not next week, but the week after, we're doing all night shift, like all week. So we'll see how that goes. We'll see if I do an episode for that week. But I'm probably gonna keep doing these weekly things. We might have a little bit of a shorter episode, but I don't know. I mean, there some of these topics that I'm going to be talking about, I'm not going to have, like, incredible, like, long segments. I don't know. I might. Who knows? I'm not a guarantee. I'm a wild card, bruh. I'm a wild card, my guy. But, we got a couple of, we got a TV show, a movie, another five on my top 100, and we're going to be talking a little bit, talk about a recent trailer that just came out. So, with that, let's just, like, get right into this, bitch. First topic of the day. I'm gonna be talking about, the first season of Barry. That's right, HBO's Barry. It stars Bill Hader, Steven Root, and Sarah Goldberg, Anthony Carrigan. I mean, you probably don't really know, but the main dude is Bill Hader. You know him from SNL and other comedies as well. He's a funny guy. He does impressions. You know, he was on SNL. He's incredibly hilarious. But this is a little bit different. This is way different from what he used to. If you're unfamiliar with Barry, sort of the plot of Barry is that Bill Hader, he plays, you know, a guy named Barry Berkman, and he's a hitman. He's a contract killer, and he also discovers that he wants to become an aspiring actor because he takes a hit in LA, and he runs into an acting class, and somehow or other falls in love with acting. So that's what the show is him trying to be a hitman and also be an actor at the same time, because both professions really don't go together. You can't really do one or the other, but it's just him trying to deal with that fact. It's actually created by Bill Hader and a man named Alec Berg. I want to look at his filmography a little bit. Yeah, he's a producer on Curb Your Enthusiasm. He was on Seinfeld, I'm pretty sure, as well. So, yeah, pretty big dude in the industry. And Bill Hader is, I think they both write it as well. I mean, they're not the only writers, obviously, but they have a writer's room, but they're always in it. And it's kind of their brainchild. And it's like comedic drama, you know, dramedy. It's in that dramedy genre a little bit. More towards the drama, I will surprisingly say so. Now, this is on HBO, so I know a lot of people probably canceled their HBO subscriptions after, you know, what Game of Thrones did to them. I did. But I have a friend who has a Hulu account, and he also has the HBO, like, addition to it. So I bummed that off of him. Thank you, Chewy, for you. If you're watching, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And this podcast also appreciates you and thanks you. Because, two of my topics today are from HBO, which is including this one. Can you hear my chair? Sorry if you can hear my chair. But with squeaking, whatever. But yeah, since Game of Thrones, it's kind of been like, there's really no reason to have HBO. There's another, I mean, there's Westworld. But I mean, I watched the first season. It was really great. I may or may not go back to it and review it on this podcast. We'll see how I feel in the future. But if you guys would want that, you know, you can comment below and request it, and I'll do it. I'll rewatch it and get back to you on how I feel about it. But I liked the first season. But I never watched the second or the third, and I didn't hear, like, amazing things about it. So I was just like, eh, whatever. Maybe later some other time. But yeah. So I also kind of want to know how big of a hit HBO took after Game of Thrones. But whatever. This here, though, this show, Barry, is a definite reason to get HBO, though. if you can bum HBO off of someone, or honestly, this is kind of worth it, man. Barry's really, this show is, it's surprisingly phenomenal. It's pretty short. I think there's only 8 episodes in the first season. Each one's like a half an hour long. Plus they have like these little shorts of like in the inside the episodes at the very end, which is really cool to see, you know, how, you know, the episodes were made and what was being thought of in the writer's room and what Bill Hader and Alec Bird were thinking with, you know, certain scenes. That's always really cool to see at the end of every episode. But yeah, in pretty much every way, the show really, really does well. I mean, I was kind of struggling with what the show doesn't do well. But let's get into what it does really well. Like, let's get into the specifics. So I said before that it's both a drama and, you know, a comedy, and this show nails both and has this perfect balance. I mean, it's not a direct balance. I mean, the show's funny, but it's more thrilling and suspenseful and dramatic, you know, than comedic, in my opinion. But I mean, there are hilarious scenes and hilarious characters that we'll get into a little bit. But I mean, the plot itself is hilarious. A hitman trying to be an actor is just so bizarre and hilarious, and it's also played by Bill Hader, who surprisingly, I think some random fan is just going on outside. I'm sorry. Again, between you and me, I fucking hate this apartment. But so maybe in November, we'll be changing some scenery, and the set will probably look a lot better. Up. Oh, I forgot to put these lights on. Oh, okay, there we go. Even though it doesn't really do anything, but it still kind of looks kind of cool. But anyway, sorry, getting back to Barry now. Yeah, Bill Hader is surprisingly imposing. I mean, the dude's really fucking tall. I'm pretty sure he's like 6'3 or 6'4 or something. But like, you would think like, oh, some SNL funny guy is going to play a hitman and be intimidating. He kind of is a little bit. I mean, sometimes like he's like, it's like there's some moments where you're like, yeah, don't fuck with that dude. I mean, he's also like Bill Hader, though. He's also still Bill Hader, that like really good dude. But like, he's also, you know, a killer and kind of a crazy person. But yeah, he does a fantastic job. He's amazing. But, you know, I said before that I think this show is a little bit more dramatic than comedic. And some of the drama and the intense scenes, like, you don't really, the amount of that this show is dark, like the dark tone that this show kind of brings out, like some scenes are just like kind of floor you a bit. You're like, whoa, I did not expect this show to get that fucked up or that dark. Holy crap. That, okay, this is our show. So yeah, be kind of on the lookout for those really, really fucked up moments, especially at the very end. You're like, holy shit, man, how do you come back from that? But yeah, so it's actually surprisingly insanely dark. The show just surprises you all over the place. I mean, let's just get into the characters a little bit. Obviously, Barry is the best part of the show. Obviously, Bill Hader as Barry is amazing. Like I said, kind of puts forward, you believe that he's this like proficient murderer and a skilled killer, basically a skilled fighter. He used to be a Marine and now he's a hitman. But the other side characters are also spectacular and work so well for what they were going for. Fuchs is actually played by the guy who played Milton in Office Space. Let me get you his name. Steven Root. He plays Fuchs, who is like he's just that guy who kind of sets up the contracts for Barry. He's kind of like the man. He's almost like his manager, but also kind of a shitty person as well. He's like kind of in it for his own selfish means for money, but he also does care for Barry, and that is brought out a few times in the season. You see, you know, what their relationship is like and how it kind of became that. Hank, NoHo Hank, is a Chechen gangster who's like the number two in this Chechen gangster family. Other than Bill Hader as Barry, Anthony Carrigan as Hank is the hands down best part of the show. He's so funny. He's like the nicest, most polite mobster and psycho that you could ever meet, which is so, it parallels perfectly what the show is, of this, you know, guy who is aspiring to be an actor and like a good person, but he's also a murderer. So it's like, well, you can't really be one or the other. They conflict with each other. So I think that's the character of Hank is very brilliant and hilarious. Mr. Cousineau, Barry's acting teacher, played by Henry Winkler. He is also hilarious, incredibly selfish, but like you love him for it. Like this is stereotypical actor, kind of like full of himself. He has his own book, you know, he charges pretty ridiculous rates for his acting class, and it's pretty hilarious. He's great. He's amazing. Sally Reed, she's another actor in this acting class who kind of has a romantic thing going with Barry eventually, and you see how that develops. She's a very interesting character. She kind of comes from a little bit of a darker background. You don't really find that out until a little bit later, but she's also she's an interesting character because she's also an aspiring actress, and she's kind of selfish, and she doesn't really think about others. She just kind of thinks about herself, and you kind of see how she kind of develops as a character, which is kind of fun. And also Detective Moss, a chick who plays Detective Moss. What's her name? Paula Newsom. She does a really great job with the small part that she really plays in the first season, but she's also really great when she is in it. Everyone in Barry's acting class is hilarious. They all play very small roles, but they do it really well. So all the acting here is phenomenal and really hits every single point that they're trying to get across with every theme and every scene. Like, they make you, the emotions that the show wants you to feel, you feel. They execute everything flawlessly, which is signs of, you know, really great direction and really great writing. And let's get into that a little bit. The direction first is, I love the interesting choices that they make. They do this thing where Barry like has these visions or these fantasies in his mind, and they play out on screen, and it's pretty hilarious, and it's a very interesting way. And you can tell that it's a vision, but then at the very end they do something, they kind of switch it up where it's like, oh, this seems like a fantasy, and then it goes on for longer and longer, and you're like, oh, this isn't a fantasy. And they actually talk about that in the inside the episode at the very end of said episode, and they bring that up as like a specific directing choice, and that's just some of the cool shit that I really appreciate as a film, you know, buff film nerd, and you know, loving great stories and having them being crafted like that. And also, the writing is incredibly brilliant. I mean, obviously can be witty and quick-witted, like with those comedic beats, but also for the dramatic beats, shit like comes back from like the very first episode and the very last episode. And that's, you know, tying everything together and bringing everything back, and everything that has been done and you've seen before can come into play later is always a really great sign of really awesome writing. And that's really great. And just the vision of the show is very consistent, that you know what they're trying to do, and they do it incredibly well. So yeah, phenomenal. Great job from everyone behind the scenes. It does incredibly well. So when I was trying to look for like criticisms about the show, and like I was looking at like, what does the show not do, like, perfectly? And I honestly couldn't really find any. I really thought, I was thinking really fucking hard when I was watching it, and I'm like, man, I mean, it's very short, it's very concise, and it's to the point, you know, 8 episodes, only half an hour length episodes in one season. It's just so good. I mean, like, I can't sit here and tell you something bad about Barry season 1. I started watching season 2 and it's also the same thing. It's just a little bit more like, holy shit, this is even more ridiculous than the first season. But yeah, man, like, if you haven't seen Barry on HBO, I mean, granted, if you don't have HBO, you probably haven't seen it. But I mean, it's worth watching, man. It's really great. I think it's one of the best shows out there right now. I mean, it's one of those where it's like, I don't think it's probably one of the best shows I've ever seen, but if someone would come and tell me, like, oh, Barry's, like, one of the best TV shows on television right now, I wouldn't argue with them. It's kind of like my relationship with the video game The Witcher 3. Like, yes, I love that game, and I spent countless hours in it. But, like, is it my favorite video game of all time? No, it's not. But if someone, like, was trying to argue that it's the best video game ever made, I wouldn't argue with them. Like, because it's like, I can't really find a flaw in it. So I can't argue with someone who thinks this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. So that's kind of how I feel about Barry, season 1 at least. I started watching season 2 last night, and it's, again, it's fucking phenomenal still, so yeah, I'll probably watch the second and third season, maybe get back to you, do another sort of, kind of how I did Ozark, where I reviewed season 1, and then later I just kind of binged the rest and watched and reviewed season 2 and season 3, like, lumped together, because I'm pretty sure season 3 is out as well, so, and it won't take me that long to watch it, so I'll get back to you guys on that. So if you haven't seen Barry, check it out. It's pretty phenomenal. And don't let, you know, Bill Hader, you know, since he's the face, it's like, oh, like, you know, he's just an SNL funny guy. Don't let that throw you off of how intense, suspenseful, and dark the show is. I mean, yes, it's really funny, but it's also really suspenseful. So just be on a lookout for that, but definitely check it out. It shouldn't be missed. It's really good. And who knows, you might think it's, like, the best fucking thing ever. So, yeah. All right. Moving on to a film that I've been wanting to watch ever since I watched the very first Christopher Nolan Tenet trailer. When I saw that trailer and I saw the main actor and I was just like, wait, he looks familiar. And I'm like, and then I look him up and I was like, oh, he was in Black Klansman. And oh, shit. That dude is Denzel Washington's son. So, right? I want to make sure. I don't want to, like, claim it or anything and him not be Denzel Washington's son. I'm pretty sure he is. I'm almost positive that he is. Let me see. John David Washington, son of Denzel Washington. That's what I thought. Okay. So yeah, I don't have my fucking head up my ass when I say this. Don't worry, guys. We're only on like 20 minutes. So relax. This might be a little bit longer, but anyway. So yeah, I watched Black Klansman because it's also on HBO. And, you know, thanks to my friend Chewy, I have his Hulu, and he also has HBO. He lumps HBO in with Hulu. Hulu? That's a really cool feature that you can, like, lump shit in with Hulu. I think you can lump in, like, Showtime, HBO, I'm sure some other channels as well. I should probably invest in that and stop bumming it off of my friend. But anyway, thank you, Chewy. But, yeah, so I watched Black Klansman, and if you're unfamiliar with Black Klansman, it's about this real-life guy named Ron Stallworth. He's an African-American police officer back in, I believe it was the 70s. He was a police officer in the Colorado Springs Police Department, and he successfully infiltrates his local Ku Klux Klan branch. So he becomes a Ku Klux Klan member with the help of another undercover detective, in his unit. So it's directed by Spike Lee. So I haven't seen one of his films in a long time. So it's happy to see one of his. And it stars John David Washington, like I just said. Adam Driver. Who else is there? It's pretty much everyone else, everyone notable. What's his face plays David Duke, which is hilarious. Topher Grace, right? Topher Grace. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Topher Grace plays David Duke, which is pretty funny. He does actually a pretty good job. But yeah, John David Washington and Adam Driver are the two main actors in this film. And like I said before, John David Washington, Denzel Washington's son. So it's always kind of interesting to see these, like, you know, children of these really famous people who have a legacy already, and they try to do the same thing, like follow in their parents' footsteps and their same, like, you know, their same career path. It's always very interesting because it highly, you know, isn't like the best thing to do for children like this. But this is like one of the few times where I think the son does an incredibly good job and really stands on his own as a fantastic actor, because he gives a hella good performance here. Him and Adam Driver are both phenomenal in this film. Now, all the acting is phenomenal in this. Everyone brings it to the table. I think Spike Lee does do a really good job of really getting really great performances out of his actors. I think that's one of his big strengths as a director. Also, having a banging soundtrack is also one of Spike Lee's great strengths. But yeah, also the afros are on point, especially John David Washington's afro in this one. I don't know if it's his actual hair, but it's pretty, like, perfect. It's pretty great. I love it. In the film, like, I don't know, just like the very type of, like, culture back in the 70s, especially African-American culture, was very, you know, jazz heavy and very, I don't know, it just seemed joyous and fun. I thought that was really cool to see that, you know, in terms of, like, you know, all the civil rights shit that was going on back then, they still had the time to really, you know, embrace their culture and have fun with it. And, you know, I thought those moments in the film I really enjoyed and made me smile heavily. I really liked that a lot. The film does a lot very, very well. Like I said, the acting is stellar from everyone. Surprisingly, the film is hilarious. Surprisingly, very hilarious. Especially at the very end when he's on the phone, Ron Stallworth, our main character, is on the phone with David Duke, and he basically tells him to go fuck himself, and that he's been talking to a black dude this entire time. It's so great. I think it's just as funny as it is suspenseful. I mean, there's a lot of suspenseful, you know, things in here. I mean, you're dealing with, you know, the Ku Klux Klan and a black man infiltrating it. I mean, it's shit's gonna go down, and it definitely does. I don't know if it actually does in that way. I mean, I'm sure some creative liberties were taken with this one, but you know what? I think it works for the film heavily, and it makes it a lot more enjoyable. The writing in the show is very great. It's very, almost brilliant. The way it's delivered is also really awesome. The big thing about this one is that it does have a political message to it. But I think what makes this film really great is it's not incredibly heavy-handed. And I think it does play a little bit more of a balanced take on it. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying racism is bad. I'm saying racism is bad. I'm not saying, God damn it, Michael, stop fucking up words. Racism is clearly very bad. But I think what this film really brings out and really brings forward, which really surprised me, because I thought it was going to be pretty one-sided, and honestly, I was kind of going to be okay with that. I mean, you're dealing with the Ku Klux Klan, they're pretty fucking terrible, and if you're involved with them, you're a terrible person. Fuck you. Clearly, they're not open-minded, and they, you know, judge people strictly on race, and that's just a really dumb thing to do. You're pretty stupid. But yeah, I think it really delves in with the problem with, I guess, taking sides, or not really taking sides, but like engulfing yourself in one side and basically surrounding yourself with a bunch of people with the similar opinions as you, and having that kind of mold your way of thinking, especially about the other side. I think the one big thing that this one scene that I really loved in this movie, in this film, is when Adam Driver's character, when he was at the Ku Klux Klan like ceremony, he was like, you know, getting indoctrinated or inducted into the Ku Klux Klan with that ceremony. But they also, Spike Lee also mirrors it with another like big rally, sort of rally meeting of this black college association of like, you know, black America. I forget what exactly it was called, but they were all gathered together listening to an older black civil rights activist telling about his story of, you know, when he was like, you know, this really rough, dark, disturbing story about how he was discriminated against and shit happened to him, and it was very visceral and very like emotional. You were like, holy shit, like, yeah, like it's both, they both sides were kind of playing up their own views and like using very powerful words to incite like, you know, this group mentality and this like violence against the other side. And like how like we're the good guys, they're the bad guys. I mean, even though clearly the one side was clearly the bad side, obviously the Ku Klux Klan are the bad guys. But I mean, also it just brings out how, you know, this can be damaging even on the other side. When you're on the good side, this is still can be bad to do this. I don't know what is that. It's some fucking fan or some shit. Someone's air conditioner. I'm sorry about that if you can hear that. But I think the film does a really great job of, like, showing that and how, you know, I mean, again, it's a very political film, and a lot of times you're like, oh, that's definitely shots at the new administration that we have today. And I think some of the, I mean, that's kind of where the film does kind of have a little bit, you know, brings it down a little bit, and having those a little small, heavy-handed, you know, moments where it's like, that's a clear shot against, you know, our current president, Donald Trump, even though I don't like him at all, but, you know, I don't agree with the majority of his policies, and I just don't like him as a person. But, I mean, like, again, it's just, like, I don't really want to be reminded of, you know, of that shit when I'm watching a film, you know, but, it's still there. But I think it also, you know, really balances that with its very entertaining story, entertaining characters, engrossing plot, and, you know, incredible acting and incredible style of the film. I mean, especially when you watch a Spike Lee film, he has a certain style that's very unique to him, and that's what makes him very, you know, popular and a really talented filmmaker. Even though I don't love all of his films, I really like the majority of his films, and this is no different from those. I really, really like this film. But yeah, you know, again, I do like how, again, it takes a really balanced view, and it really, you know, drives the point home of that, like, you know, not all police officers are racist assholes, guys, which is really cool. And, you know, that's the problem with, you know, playing sides. Like, everything that this side thinks is right, or everything about this side, you know, thinks is right. And really, it's like, that's usually never what happens. There's usually some middle ground that can be found. But, I mean, yeah, again, you know, racism is clearly bad. So, but, yeah. Other than that, I mean, there's also, they kind of bring that whole Charlottesville thing, what happened in Charlottesville in the very end, and it brings some footage at the very end to kind of drive its point home, and I thought that was really kind of unnecessary, even though it was like a year removed from that. I think the Charlottesville incident, which is ridiculous how that thing could even happen, you know, that was only 3 years ago. That was back in 2017 when that happened, which is insane how that shit still goes on today and people were still, you know, judging people based off of the color of their skin. It's so dumb. Like, stop. Like, you're stupid. Like, you're not a smart person if you think someone is inherently evil strictly based off of their color of their skin. Like, you're retarded. You're dumb. Maybe not retarded. Sorry, that's not a politically correct term to use, I guess. But you're an idiot. Fuck you. But anyway, let's just say this. Does the film have the movie magic or not? Let's move on. Does it have the movie magic? Hell yeah. I definitely thought this film had the movie magic to me. Mike, it definitely had Mikey's movie magic. But it definitely surprised me how, one, good it was. How it was funny, it was intense, the acting was stellar. And just how, like, it did kind of take a balanced look, and it covered some themes that I thought would have been great to cover in a film like this, and they capitalized on that. Spike Lee capitalized on it, and I was really surprised. I was gonna be like, I kind of, you know, thought maybe this was gonna be like sort of like a sort of one-sided type of film, and I don't think it was, and I really appreciated and I commend the film for that, and that's part of the reason why I kind of loved it. And also, again, I want to circle back around to John David Washington, our main character, who plays Ron Stallworth, Denzel Washington's son. He's fucking phenomenal. He's like the man. I mean, he's very different from his father. Like, they're both incredibly likable, but like Denzel Washington has this commanding presence to him, but his son, John David Washington, he's just, like, really cool and, like, and really likable. Like, he has that personality where he's, like, quick-witted, he's funny, but he's also kind of a badass, and he's just, like, kind of a lighthearted type of dude. He's just, like, a really, sorry, I thought I heard something. I don't know. Again, there's so much fucking noise in this apartment. Sorry about this, guys. Don't worry, this will change eventually. But yeah, he's just a really likable dude. He's just kind of that really cool, level-headed type of guy. And, like, you know, obviously Denzel is that more commanding presence. So he's not trying to replicate what his father did, which I really appreciate. He finds something else that he's good at, which I really liked. And so, yeah. Especially if you're wanting to see the new Christopher Nolan film Tenet, I would definitely check this one out to see just for John David Washington's performance. And also Adam Driver, if you like Adam Driver, definitely watch this one. It's a good film. It's a really good film. I highly recommend this one. All right. So moving on to my next five in my top 100. I'm telling you what, guys. Shit is getting hot here in Pennsylvania. I know it's supposed to rain tomorrow, but I think it was like the high of 80 or some shit this weekend, which is hot. It might not be hot for you, like, Southerners, but, like, for us Northerners, especially in the East Coast, it's fucking hot, all right? Anyway, so, yeah, getting to the next five of my top 100 films of all time. My top 100 films. So, before I talk about this, I'd like to give a couple of disclaimers before I get into this. All these movies that I go into on this top one, on my top 100 list, they all have the movie magic. They all have Mikey's movie magic. I love literally all 100 of them. So, yeah, if you're worrying about, you know, if they don't have the movie magic, they do. And I'm not going to go into an in-depth review like I would usually do on this podcast whenever I review a film. I just talk about a couple of things that I really like, what makes it, like, you know, be in my top 100 and whether it might rise and fall in the future, because pretty much from 100 to 50, they kind of can be a little bit flexible depending on, like, you know, how they age to me and through the years, because, I mean, some of them have changed through the years. I made this list, I think, 5 years ago, and yeah, so it's changed a lot. But also, I mean, this kind of goes without saying, this is just my opinion. These are my top 100 favorite films. Doesn't mean they're the top 100 best films of all time. They're just my top 100 favorites. So with that, let's just get into it. This is number 65 through 61. So starting right off, leading off, well, not really leading off, it's number 65. I'm looking at the tomato meter score, and this kind of fitting that it has a 65% on Rotten Tomatoes. I did not plan that. That's really creepy and weird. But we have Home Alone, the very first Home Alone film, one of the Christmas film on here. It's not the best Christmas movie. We'll get to the best Christmas movie ever made of all time, a little bit higher on this list, but this is a close second. Home Alone, Macaulay Culkin as a young kid. It's one of those more nostalgic films for me. I mean, I think this is probably the very first Christmas movie I have ever seen. This one and The Christmas Story. But Home Alone is like the greatest. It's such a unique film, like, for, I guess, clearly when it came out, but it still is. I mean, it's just, I watched it on repeat as a kid. Even when it wasn't Christmas, I watched this one, and I still watch it today. Every Christmas, I have to watch the first Home Alone, and I watch the second one as well. I think the second one's pretty funny, but I think the first one is clearly the best one. Get on your knees and tell me you love me. Oh my gosh. Home Alone, man, is just the greatest thing. Look what you did, you little jerk. Buzz, your girlfriend. Woof. Will this one rise or fall, though? I don't know. I think it's pretty good to stay at 65, especially since it has a 65% tomato meter score. That's an 80% audience score, which I think is kind of where it needs to be. I mean, like, are you really going to critique Home Alone? Really, guys? Are you gonna give an in-depth analysis of how Home Alone was made? Get the fuck out of here, guys. It's great. Home Alone is great. It deserves 100%. Fuck you. All right, moving on. I got a little too angry about that. Okay, moving on. Okay, well, I guess Rotten Tomatoes server is down, so fuck me, I guess. Number 64, we have Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So, yeah. A lot of people don't like this one, of the Indiana Jones films, but I don't know, man. This was the first Indiana Jones film I actually watched as a kid, and it was my favorite, pretty much strictly for that reason. Obviously, now it's not anymore. I would say it would probably be Raiders of the Lost Ark. I don't know why. I just had a fucking brain fart. I was thinking of The Last Crusade, but that might be the next one. But, Raiders of the Lost Ark is my favorite. But this one is not bad. Like, people say this one's kind of bad. I mean, granted, yeah, the girl in it is fucking awful, and Short Round is kind of racist, but I kind of love him. Dr. Jones! Jesus Christ, it's so bad. But it's so hilarious, and I love it. I mean, you might not, and rightfully so. I mean, I get it. You know, it is kind of racist, and some of this movie kind of sucks, especially dealing with, you know, Indiana Jones' romantic interest, quote-unquote. But yeah, she sucks. But everything else about this film is hilarious and great, and just a fun time. It's still Indiana Jones. Harrison Ford's still there. It's also probably the darkest one. It's pretty fucking violent. You know, Kalima, a guy rips a dude's heart out. How do you not love that? I mean, come on, guys. Oh, man. So great. I love Temple of Doom. I think it's very, it's very different from the other two. And I think that's another reason why I kind of like this one a lot. But, with that, moving on to the next, number 63, we have the third in the Indiana Jones trilogy, because there's only three Indiana Jones films. There's no more. None other exist, right? That's right. Nothing else. I think there was another film that was sort of like an Indiana Jones film, dealing with some aliens and some crystal skull, but I don't believe that was an Indiana Jones film. That's not part of the series or the franchise. It's just three of them, and The Last Crusade is the last one in the trilogy. And I like this one more than Temple of Doom, mainly just because Sean Connery's in it. Sean Connery's the shit, even though it's kind of, you know, it's not really working on the same, it's not like rehashing Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, you're just still dealing with Nazis again. I think that's pretty much where the comparisons end. But, I mean, Sean Connery adds such a great element to this one, and just his chemistry with Harrison Ford is just electric. The Last Crusade is the shit. I think Last Crusade has a lot bigger of a chance to rise than Temple of Doom does. I think Temple of Doom will stay in my top 100, but I think it might lower. It might, have a higher number in my list over time. I think Temple of Doom, since I've gotten older, have liked it less and less as I get older, but The Last Crusade I like more and more as I get older, so they kind of are very different in that way. But both I still like, and I think Indiana Jones The Last Crusade definitely has a chance to rise in my list. But with another action adventure film, another sort of coming of age, another old classic, number 62, we got The Goonies, baby. Some of the best adventure you will ever see. Goonies, Sean Astin's probably his best performance ever as Mikey Walsh, as the leader of the Goonies. Josh Brolin's in it as well. The fucking criminals who are in there, they're great, and they're also very creepy and scary. Oh damn. I'm looking at the picture of Chunk, Jeff Cohen, and he's like kind of like, he looks pretty good. I'm like, oh damn. He ain't Chunk no more, boy. Like, he's fucking, like, fit. Damn. Okay. Yeah, Corey Feldman's in there as well. Just a lot of great, it's just a great coming-of-age story, and it's just a classic adventure film. I mean, come on, guys. Like, it's, you're looking for treasure. Come on now. I haven't seen Goonies in a long time. I need to rewatch the Goonies. Probably if I rewatch it, it's probably gonna rise. Certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, if that's anything, if you want to know. I think The Goonies definitely has a chance to rise for me. But, so let's move on to our final film. How are we on time a little bit here? Okay, 42 minutes, we're good. But, so number 61, our final film that we're going to be talking about in my top 100 today. Number 61, we have Warrior. I think this one, you probably have a lot less of a chance of knowing Warrior. Warrior is a MMA fighting movie, and it's based off of, it's not really based off of anything, but it's these two brothers. One of them is a school teacher, another one is he was in the Marines or something. He was in the armed forces, I'm pretty sure he was a Marine. And they both used to wrestle competitively as kids and as teenagers. And they used, and I think the one of them used to do, used to be in the UFC. And they both sort of train for this Sparta MMA tournament, and they both get in, and, you know, eventually they actually have to, you know, they have to fight each other. And it's just a really emotionally resonant film with me. I mean, if you watch this film and you don't cry at the end, you're heartless. This is such an emotional film. You know, based off of, like, you know, a broken family, two brothers who have a broken relationship, who haven't seen each other in years, and they just, you know, they work through that, and they, you know, work through it, and one of the ways they work through it is by fighting each other in a cage using mixed martial arts. And it's, the fights in this film are really well done, and the acting, both Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton are the two brothers. Also, Nick Nolte's in it as their father. He's fucking phenomenal. But Tom Hardy is in that, like, pre-Bane phase, so he looks fucking scary. And Joel Edgerton is just a really likable dude. And it's a really great film directed by Gavin O'Connor. He's a talented filmmaker. I like him a lot. I've been following his career. I think he just came out with a film, that one film. I forget what the title of it is called, but it stars Ben Affleck, and he's like a high school basketball coach. I heard that was actually pretty good. I never got a chance to watch it. Maybe I'll rent it and watch and get back to you guys. But he also directed that film called The Accountant, which is also starring Ben Affleck, and that film is really great. But I think Warrior is hands down his best one, and is, you won't regret watching it. It's a phenomenal film. Also filmed, some scenes are filmed in my area, which is also kind of cool. So you get a little bit bonus points for that. Will Warrior Rise, though? It might, but I think there's a lot of really good movies ahead of it, so we'll see. It doesn't have that classic factor that The Goonies and Indiana Jones has for me, so, and that nostalgia behind it, but it has that emotional, resonant undertone to it, which is, you know, always a good thing. So, yeah, that was my next five of my top 100, guys. Now, I usually end my episodes there on my Nerd Out Sanctuary podcast there, but we have one little smaller topic to talk about with you guys, and it's a trailer. It's a newer trailer. Now, I've been trying to stay away from trailers because my opinion is, I mean, like, if I'm a fan of the filmmaker or the actor and I know I'm going to see it, I usually stay away from it. But, I mean, this trailer was kind of unavoidable for me, even though I really don't want to watch any trailers for this film. I'm definitely not going to watch any more for this one. Why is there? I'm sorry about the noise, but anyway, I'm not going to watch any more trailers for this one because it's directed by Christopher Nolan and stars John David Washington, who was in Black Klansman that I just talked about, and also Robert Pattinson that I've been recently talking about on this podcast, who I love. And the film is called Tenet, and it's Christopher Nolan's newest film. And the second trailer came out, I think, a day or two ago. And, so I watched it, and, yeah, it looks sick. I mean, it looks insane. It looks very Inception-like. So I'm going to kind of curve my expectations a little bit, and I think it's smart for you to do that as well. And I'm not saying this film is not going to be good. I mean, I have not seen a Christopher Nolan film that I at least really liked. I mean, I think my least favorite Christopher Nolan film is his, like, very first, which is called, I think, The Following, which is in black and white, and it's, like, an hour long, but that's, like, his very first one, and even that is really good, and I would probably say Interstellar and Dark Knight Rises are both films that I really like. I think they're really good, and they both have the movie, all four of them have the movie magic, but they're not, like, elite special, like, you know, The Dark Knight, The Prestige, Memento, Inception, Dunkirk. They're not like, holy shit, these are some of the best films ever fucking made. So, but I'm gonna kind of curb my expectations a little bit because it does kind of, it looks very reminiscent of Inception. I'm not saying this is not gonna be original, but I don't know. I wanna set my expectations a little bit. I don't wanna go in expecting the greatest film I've ever seen. So I think that would also be smart for you. I mean, it's always good to kind of curb your expectations, especially with these recent things that have been letting all of us down recently with Game of Thrones, Star Wars, you know, maybe The Last of Us. We'll see about that one. You know, other stuff about that, other stuff with that as well. You know, the Justice League movie and all that. So, you know, it's always good to kind of curb your enthusiasm a little bit. Funny, not a show on HBO, but I also wanted to just talk about this trailer because it at the very end it says coming to theaters, which is very important, and I will be seeing this one. It's coming out, I think, July 17th of this year, which was its original date, so hopefully movie theaters are open by then, and if they are, I'm probably gonna go see it. I'll see it with a mask on or whatever, but I mean, I don't want movie theaters to, you know, go out of business because of some fucking pandemic. And I know, like, yes, this pandemic is a real thing, and it's always good to overreact when in terms of, you know, a pandemic, a worldwide one at that. You know, it's always good to overreact so we can all mitigate the effects of it. But I mean, like, man, like, I love movies too much, and I love going to the movies way too much. And if that goes away, I'm going to be extremely fucking pissed. The XFL already went bankrupt because of this fucking bullshit. And now, hopefully, movie theaters might even... It's been looking like that every day that, you know... I mean, even with streaming, theaters are taking hits, and now even with this, it just gives people another excuse not to go to a movie theater. And I know, like, if you don't want to because you're afraid of getting COVID, yes, don't go. But I mean, I'm gonna be seeing this. I'm not fucking watching this this film for the first time on my television. I'm watching it for the first time in a quality movie theater that I will select myself. And I have one, and hopefully it will be open by, you know, July 17th. Hopefully, it says coming to theaters. So, none of this fucking, oh, I'm gonna fucking be released on, you know, streaming services or, you know, available to be rented for $20. So, yeah. Tenet looks fucking sick, though. I'm really excited. I love Robert Pattinson. I love John David Washington. I think Kenneth Branagh is gonna be, like, the villain, too, which looks really interesting. And, obviously, Michael Caine's in it. Michael Caine. But, I'm in Tenet. So, yeah. He's gonna be in it, because he's in every Christopher Nolan movie. And I just love Christopher Nolan as a filmmaker. I have a whole segment on this podcast where I just delve into why I love Christopher Nolan, and I reviewed Dunkirk on this podcast, one of my earlier episodes. But yeah, I think Tenet looks really great, and I think it's going to be a really fantastic film. I'm just going to curb my expectations a little bit, because, you know, I don't want to set the bar extremely high and let it, you know, not meet that. But yeah, so with that, guys, that's kind of the episode. That's Nerd Out Sanctuary episode 21. If you've been watching my episodes, I like to end on a certain type of message with all my episodes, and that message is that it's okay to not be okay. You know, shout out to HBO for stealing that line. I mean, it's not really my line. It's not like I fucking copyrighted or patented or whatever. I mean, it's just a good message to spread that, you know, especially at a time like this. I mean, it's hard to talk about this because, you know, everyone's, you know, kind of like, what the fuck am I going to do for money and all that. But hopefully, I think the country's opening up more, and, you know, it's looking more and more that this might be going away and it's kind of trickling off. Hopefully it doesn't have... Obviously, we're going to get a spike when everything is opening up and people are going to movies and other public places and shit like that. Obviously, COVID is going to increase, and hopefully that spike isn't astronomical where we're going to have to shut the whole country down again. I believe that's not going to happen, but, you know, and I'm hoping that's not going to happen. But, yeah, so just know that, you know, it's okay to not be okay, and that, you know, tomorrow's a new day, and hopefully, I know some things are so bad that they're impossible to get over, but, you know, probably not impossible to live with, and, you know, you can use that negative stuff that you had happened to you and use it to your benefit and personal growth moments and, you know, learning experiences and to learn how to be a better human. That's what I did, because I had a lot of shit go on in my life. And, you know, I learned to take that and use it positively rather than negatively. So, yeah, that's my message. And with that, guys, it's kind of it. That's it for the episode. I'm super fucking hungry. I know, I get it, I'm a fat boy, but I haven't eaten anything today, and I need to make some spaghetti and meatballs tonight, because, you know, why the fuck not? But, yeah, so I hope you guys enjoyed this. If you're just listening on a podcast, know that this is also a YouTube channel. And if you're just watching me on YouTube, know that this is also a podcast. I'm on Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. I'm on those three major audio platforms. And if you're just listening, again, this is also a YouTube channel. I clip these episodes up so you don't have to watch the full thing if you were looking to watch just a specific part of my episode. So, yeah, take a look, subscribe, comment, give me a review on iTunes. I'd appreciate it. Comment below, ask me some questions. I'll answer them in each episode, depending on, you know, if it's a good question, most likely it'll probably be, I'll probably answer you. So, yeah, with that, guys, I appreciate you, all your support and you tuning in and checking me out. I really appreciate everything, and it means a lot to me, and I hope you guys keep doing that. Thank you. I'm going to continue doing this, hopefully on a weekly basis. I don't know if it's going to be more consistent than that, or more frequent than that at this point, but... yeah, I'm not gonna stop doing this. So I'll see you guys on the next episode of Nerd Out Sanctuary. Bye.